Good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming. Today we are honored to have Michelle Bentley. She's a registered physiotherapist and a counselor in Ottawa. She used to be part of the Christian Counseling Ottawa, and she's here today to talk to us about stress management. So can we just welcome here in our church.
Thank you. Can you hear me? No? Let's see. That better? It's not on. It's on. Where's our friend? Hello? Now it's working. Okay. Do I have it right in front of my face? How's that? That close. Okay. Now you can hear me. I could just shout, which would be fine. So I'm really glad to be here tonight. I'm very excited to share with you just some ideas on stress management and how you can make family life and life at work and life for yourselves just easier and less stressful. So I'm really happy to be here with you. I'm passionate about this subject because it's something that we all deal with. Personally, I'll give you a little bit of an introduction. I am a pastoral counselor and a registered psychotherapist. And you'll start seeing those initials. My initials are up on the screen. RP stands for Registered Psychotherapist, and RMFT stands for Registered Marriage and Family Therapist. And you'll start seeing the RP coming out. And what the RP means is that you can trust that that person has had a master's degree in counseling education, and that they have had a lot of supervision, a lot of training, a lot of experience. So really the whole idea is so that you can be protected with who you talk to, so you know that they actually know what they're talking about and they're skilled in helping you. And a pastoral counselor is somebody who's been trained in also incorporating spirituality when they talk about counseling. So I've given Albert some information on a local organization, which is actually about trying to orient myself in the church. I think it's about four blocks that way. You know that little mall where the Tim Hortons is? The next street over, there's Christian Counseling Ottawa, and they're all registered psychotherapists or qualifying registered psychotherapists there, and they're also all pastoral counselors. So if you're looking for somebody to go to, that's somebody that you can go to. And if you have any kind of benefits through extended health benefits, then it's covered, like under the federal government, it's covered to go and talk to somebody. So I just invite you to take advantage of that opportunity if you feel like you need some more support than just learning about stress management, which is what we're going to talk about tonight. So personally, I work with families, children, individuals, and couples. And I have an office in Bell's Corners, and I work with almost everybody. My first degree was in education, so I have a real passion for helping families and helping children as well. So I work with children too. So I'm glad to be here. We'll see how I do with this little thing that has been put in my hand that I've never used before. I'm one of those people who's not an eye person, so this is new for me. Ooh, it worked. There we go. It hasn't changed up there, though. There we are. Okay, so I'll have to wait. I'll have to remind myself to wait. So when we're talking about stress, people often say that they're stressed, and many of you can probably relate to that. I feel stressed. I'm stressed. I'm overstressed. And what that usually means is that things are happening in our environment that feel like too much. It's too many. It's too fast. It's too unpredictable. It's too soon, or it's too complicated. And so then we feel stressed. We can feel rushed, pressured, overwhelmed, out of control, or just plain tired. And that's what can happen with stress. So God has given us a recipe for stress management. He actually gave us spiritual tools. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So God gave us the tools. Okay, so I'm done. We can all go home. Not really, because sometimes it takes more than that, right? We pray, we give all our troubles to God over and over, and we still feel stressed. So that takes more than that. So on a practical level, we sometimes need more than prayer. So God created us with a survival mode, and that survival mode gives us strength and focus to help handle challenges. It's like when David fought Goliath. He needed strength and focus. Or even when Jesus overturned the tables in the temple. That took energy and focus. And so God gives us those physical tools as well. So what might this reaction to stress look like to yourself and others? What does that psychological, emotional stress look like? Well, you might come home from work, and the kids run up to you, and they say hello, and you push them away, saying you're too tired. That's stress. You go to bed early, but you can't fall asleep because you're constantly thinking about everything that happened at work that day, or you're worrying about work tomorrow, or you're worrying about your kids. That's stress. A coworker asks for advice about something, and you just impatiently snap at them, and you say, I don't have time for your problems. Or your boss offers you a promotion, and all you can think of is, oh my word, that's going to be so much extra work. I can't handle it. I'd be too stressed. Or your child gets out of bed and asks for a glass of water. And you yell at them and tell them to go back to bed. That's stress. So these are what can happen to us on a practical level when we feel overwhelmed and when there's too much stress in our lives. So the stress response is very natural and it's intentional. If you look up on the screen, it actually shows you how much of us is involved in stress. It's all of us. It's the brain, the mind, the body. When you feel stressed, a signal goes up in your brain, right down your spinal cord, right down to your kidneys. And your kidneys release adrenaline to help you deal with the stress. And that adrenaline goes all through your body. You probably felt it within the last week. How many of you here drive a car? Okay, how many drove in the last week? How many had somebody potentially cut them off or do something in the last week where you felt a little jolt in your body? That was an adrenaline response, right? That was stress. That was your body getting you ready to fight back or to run away. The only problem is you're in a car, so you can't do much. But you feel that jolt. Your heart might pound. You might get a feeling in the pit of your stomach. You feel a lump in your throat. That's that jolt of adrenaline. The signals went from your eyes and what you felt in the car and also your mind. It's very important because your mind said things like, how dare he cut me off? He could have caused an accident. I've got kids in the back seat. I would have been late for work. And all that stuff starts going and going and going, and that fuels the brain to have even more stress. I have two dogs. One of my dogs, when she senses something might be fearful, which could be a little rock on the sidewalk, she'll circle it and circle it. Any of you have dogs that they might do that? They kind of circle it and paw at it. So she finally figures out it's safe. She's so smart. She's much smarter than people. As soon as she figures out it's safe, she shakes her whole body. And she releases all that adrenaline. And then she walks off, and the rock is no longer a problem. But what we do is we drive off thinking, I can't stand that. That driver was so rude. He broke the law. Where are the police when you need them? And we're just thinking, thinking, thinking. And when we do that, our body can't calm down. Is still trying to fight the bear that we thought was there. So this is what can happen in the stress response. We have hormones of adrenaline, of cortisol, and even of oxytocin. And oxytocin is actually the cuddle-loving hormone. So when we're under stress, That's why we want to reach out. We want to call somebody. We want to talk to somebody. Maybe we want to hug, because that's also a hormone that's released. It makes you want to connect with people. And God is a God of relationship. The entire Bible is full of relationship. God's relationship with us, our relationship with God, and our relationship with each other. That's what it's all about. So it's not surprising that when we're under stress, we want to reach out to somebody and connect and ask for help. That's normal and it's appropriate. Even if we've been raised to be really strong and tough, and I can handle it on my own, that's not what God wanted. God wanted us to reach out to other people. So that's all part of the stress response. So now maybe you might be thinking, okay, now I get it. Now I get what happens when I feel really angry and I snap at somebody, but I'm really scared inside. It's all part of the stress response. So what do we do with that? That's the question. So what do others see? What is a stressful effect? What do other people see? How do you know somebody's stressed? Just go ahead and call it out. How do you know somebody's stressed? Pardon? They yell? Okay. Angry? Always complaining? Okay. Eating a lot? Yeah. Facial expression? Yeah. Okay. Tired. Feeling very tired. Sleeping. Yeah, can be crying. What do children do when they're stressed? They might cry, scream, yell, stomp their feet. Say, no! Pardon? Throw themselves on the floor. And don't you wish you could sometimes? Like at work, you just want to throw yourself on the floor and scream and cry and say, I can't do that. We would love to do that, but we don't anymore. But kids do. And it's because they're overwhelmed with emotions. And so we need tools how to handle that. Now, that's a topic for a whole other talk. But it's so important to remember that your kids get stressed too. There's some right there who are demonstrating that they get stressed too. This looks like an exciting story. It's like, oh, somebody hit somebody, I'm thinking. Somebody was stressed. They didn't know how to handle their emotions, and with little kids, they hit. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so the adrenaline's flowing, the cortisol's flowing, and so's the oxytocin. So what do? You come and get mom. Right? You come and get mom. Help me, protect me. Awesome. Somebody get hit? Yeah. I could see that punching going on. Yeah. So this is part of stress and how we handle stress. And kids are great teachers at that we can see how they handle stress sometimes. And they have what we call meltdowns. And that's okay because they haven't learned yet. And I'll just give you one little snippet of information about your kids. And that is, when they're really upset and overwhelmed with emotions, they need you to teach them how to handle their emotions. That means time in, not time out. That means coming alongside them and talking with them, not hitting them. That's what kids need. And a lot of you, like me, probably grew up without learning that. My dad used to say, don't cry or I'll give you something to cry about. Okay, thank you for helping me manage my feelings. Not. So we need to help kids learn how to manage their feelings. And something you can do as parents and grandparents is to model managing your own feelings. So when you're stressed, maybe not yelling. So we'll look more at that. Okay, so this little slide up here shows how high stress can cause disease. So the adrenal glands release the cortisol, the stress hormone, which has the biological impact to reduce the inflammatory response that stress produces. That's what it's trying to do. It's trying to help you. But what that can do is build up all kinds of resistance, and it builds plaque in your arteries, and you hear about the stress hormone and all that. And then it can lead to this chronic inflammation response where people have heart attacks, they have anxiety attacks, they feel awful and tired, their whole body can be affected, and that's from chronic stress. And, I lost it. I am stressed right now. I worked hard on that thing. You got it back. Okay, I'll come down here. Well, then I'll need this down here. Okay, here we go. There. Now, how do I get into the right view? You don't want all the clutter. All right. There. Okay. So what did stress just trigger for me? It triggered potentially two different responses. One is the fight, flight, or freeze response. That's the one that protects us from the bear. Okay? When we see a bear coming, we want to either fight back, run away, or freeze and play dead. And it actually depends on what kind of bear. So we won't get into all that complicated stuff. It's brown bear, black bear, or grizzly bear. You have to have three different responses. This is what our brain thinks when somebody cuts you off on the highway. When your boss says, I need you to do a presentation tomorrow. When your little kids come up and say, I have to have this thing done for school tomorrow. Our brains respond as if it's a bear. And so we get kicked into this high stress response. We feel tense, upset, irritated. You might sweat. Your heartbeat goes up. Your blood pressure goes up. All kinds of stuff. And one of the funny things is that people can have panic attacks where they think they're going to pass out because of this stress response. And they think they're going to pass out because they start having fuzzy thinking and they can't breathe properly. The only thing is, if you're having a panic attack, it's actually impossible to pass out. Because we pass out because we don't have enough blood to our brain. If you're in the fight, flight, freeze response, you have so much blood flowing everywhere at such a high rate of speed, you're not going to pass out. There's no way. So this is what we can get triggered into. Real reactions. So this is where we need to decide we have a choice. Do we get caught up in the fight, flight, freeze response? Or do we see it as a challenge? And that's the key. When we feel that energy coming on, how do we use that? Instead of getting paralyzed by it or fighting with it or running away, avoiding. How do we turn it around and say, okay, I actually have a choice here. I'm going to choose to see this as a challenge. And we can help our families do this, our spouses, our coworkers, saying, wow, when they come up and say, oh my word, I can't believe I was just asked to do a presentation tomorrow. You say, wow, that sounds like a real challenge. Oh, that sounds different than terrifying. Yeah. So we can help each other in that way. So when people go through these kinds of stress reactions, they may do things like isolate themselves, they may have muscle tension, they may have headaches, all kinds of things. And I put the little slide of the child up there because it's important to remember our children are stressed too. It's not just the adults. And we tend to brush off kids' stress. They come home and they're upset about their little friend at school who wouldn't play with them. That's important stress to them. So take the time to connect. Remember that oxytocin. They're flooded with it. That's why they're going, mummy, 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 mummy. You heard that. And then they also go home and say, Daddy, 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 Daddy. They're very persistent. You'll be glad of that when they're adults. It's awfully hard when they're kids. They're persistent. So they're seeking to connect with us because they have stress too. So stress is the reality, right? It is the reality. We all have stress in our lives. And some of it is good stress. If you're getting a job promotion and you're going to need to be training and doing all this stuff, that's stressful, but you're looking forward to the promotion. If you've got a new baby coming, that's stressful, but you're looking forward to the baby. So stress is not necessarily a bad thing. It's what it does to us and how we react to it that can cause us such trouble. So that's what we want to look at. So it's really important when we see that we're in a stressful situation to recognize that we have a choice. What are we going to do with the stress? We have that choice. We need to recognize the choice, ask for support, cope productively, and ask for forgiveness. So that's what we're going to go through quickly now. So recognizing the choice means that we say, instead of thinking or saying, I have to, we recognize there's a choice. And so often we feel so stressed because we say, I have to. I have to drive the kids to hockey. I have to drive the kids to church school. I have to drive the kids so-and-so. You're choosing to do that. I choose to drive the kids. You're involving them in the activities. It's a choice. You could say, you know what? Tonight we're all just going to play hooky and we're going to stay home and have pizza and not go to any event at all. You could choose to do that. So it's a choice. So if it's a choice, recognize it as a choice. And that alone can help you feel less stressed. Because you're saying, I have chosen to do this. I chose to get a promotion at work, which means now I have to do all this extra work. Right? So it is a choice. So there's also a choice in how we think about it and how we react to it. So one of the first things to do is to consider responding instead of reacting. So the reaction is that initial wave of feeling, emotion, all that stuff that is so important, because that tells us what's important to us. Feelings are important. How many of you were taught as kids that feelings were important? Aha! You were? You were? Very few of you? Do you notice my hand didn't go up? Remember, I'm the one who said, don't cry or I'll give you something to cry about? Yeah, I wasn't taught that feelings were important. How many of you are taught that you should listen to feelings and respond to feelings and validate feelings? Well, guess what? We need to respond to our feelings. We need to recognize them. Because your feelings are driving your decisions so often, and you don't even realize it. We see it in our kids, but we tend to push it down, minimize it, say, don't do that, don't yell, don't scream, don't cry, don't be sad, don't be angry. But they're feeling all those things. And if you squash it down, well, then I get to see them when they're in their 30s. And they come in and talk to me and say, I just don't feel right. I got all these feelings. I don't know what to do with them. So please start thinking about how you can validate feelings. And between spouses, this is hugely important. I work a lot with couples. And so often, the big complaint of couples will be, let's say, the wife says to her husband, you were late for dinner again. And the husband says, well, what do you expect? I have to work. I have to bring home money. And the wife's saying, yeah, but dinner's ruined. And he says, well, there's nothing I can do about that. Okay, anybody happy at this point? Probably not. If we can start off softly, we can say things like, I really wish you could have made it home for dinner tonight. Because I had something special. And then the husband might say something like, I'm sorry, I had to work late. Wow, that came out a little differently. I'll try harder next time. So it's so important to be able to have a soft start where we say, I feel, instead of you. And if we start communicating better as spouses, our stress levels will go down overall, because our marriage relationship is so important. And this also goes for coworkers, for parents and children. Be curious, not furious, about what's going on for that other person. Kids are not good at being calm when they're upset. They act out their feelings because they don't know what else to do with them. So that can be really intense to deal with. So the first choice is to choose a response instead of reacting. You feel upset. I don't know, anyone have an example that they want to share? When a conversation went really wrong? At work, at home? Did that one about being late for dinner sound familiar at all to anybody? No? We like to eat. We like to eat. So often I hear from spouses that they'll come in for counseling. Usually people come in for counseling, couples counseling, 7 years after problems have started. For 7 years, they have been arguing, fighting, feeling more and more distant, or even silent. And they get further and further apart. And when you've been practicing how not to talk to each other nicely for 7 years, it takes a while to get back. So if you're having problems, I invite coming in sooner rather than later. It's much easier. So when a reaction happens, we can feel that reaction, go, wow, I just got really angry. I just got really frustrated. I just got really sad. And then rather than yelling at somebody, choose your response. And one of the simplest things to do in that pause is to take a deep breath. And it's really important not to take this kind of deep breath. Wow, my throat just seized up, my shoulders got tight, my brain just went, whoa, is there a bear? And if I did that two more times, I can guarantee I would hyperventilate. I would start feeling fuzzy-headed. I wouldn't be able to think straight. No. Taking a deep breath is from here without moving your shoulders. Try it. You're moving your shoulders, Albert. It's not easy. Or you can do another way, which is a very long, slow breath. And what I teach, you can do, teach your kids. Imagine a plate of your favorite cookies. Whose favorite is chocolate chip? Okay, peanut butter? Okay, oatmeal? Pardon? So imagine that plate of cookies and take a deep breath, smelling those cookies, and then cool them off. So tonight, go home and teach that to your kids. When they're upset, they can smell the cookies and then cool them off. And you can do that. And it is one of the simplest things to do because it is a direct link from your belly to your brain. Direct link. In English, we have these sayings about the gut. Don't know if you've heard about those sayings. Pay attention to your gut. What is your gut feeling? What is your gut telling you? Because our gut actually has this big sensing organ around it. We get to do some science today, too. There's a big sensing organ around it as a direct line to the brain. So if you're feeling all stressed and anxious and you go, whoa, smell the cookies, cool the cookies, your belly sends a direct signal to the brain that says, what are you guys doing up there? We're fine. Calm down. What on earth? There's no bear. direct link. And that's why deep breathing, belly breathing, slow breathing is so important. And when you do that, so when your kids come running up, wah! What was that one? That's what I saw back there. Somebody was hitting me, right? When you start to go, take that breath. And then you can choose a response. So that pause can be really, really important. So responding instead of reacting is hugely important. Oh, and by the way, I'll mention to you that you are going to get emailed a whole handout from tonight. Okay? So, doesn't mean you can't pay attention now, so. Okay? Okay. So I like this little phrase. I don't know if you can see it too well up there. It says, worrying is like praying for what you don't want. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes. So what you can do in that instance, it's a perfect example, and it's not just for kids. It's for spouses. Right? So what you can do is get their attention first and say, whatever his name is, Joe, I need you to pay attention to me. Put the phone down for a minute. Get the attention first, because otherwise you are going to get angrier and angrier and feel like they're not paying attention, and they aren't. Because we talk about multitasking. The brain cannot multitask. It can't unless one of the activities is mindless. Women tend to be better at multitasking than men because they have more connections between the two halves of their brain. Now, you can use that on them later, right? So they have more connections. So you'll see women doing things like they're on the phone and they're wiping counters in the kitchen. You guys ever do that, right? Because one is mindless. You don't have to think, so you can talk. But if you're really concentrating, you'll stop and talk. My husband will be on the phone, walking around the kitchen, because it's cordless, right? And I will hand him a cloth, and he'll take it, and he'll look at it, and kind of look at me, and keep talking. And I'll point at the counter and point at the cloth. He's like, what? So that multitasking is not as, and it's science. There's a reason for that. It's science. So we can't blame them too much. It's science. So yeah, it is so important to get their attention ahead of time. And if something's going on, so many couples get into trouble because one of the person will say something about, you know, I'm lonely, I need you, or I need you to spend more time doing this. And the other person gets defensive and says, what do you mean you need me to spend more time doing that? Don't I do this and this and this and this? And the first person shuts down. And then you're just caught in this loop where nothing changes. And that's a very sad place to be. It feels very hard to be there. So sometimes it takes the first person to be very, very brave and to just say, what you were saying about noise and yelling and all that, to just say, this is very important to me. And if again they get defensive and reactive, to just say again, this is very important to me. I'm not trying to criticize you. I'm asking for something that is very important to me. That's simple. What tends to happen is the first spouse shuts down. And the other spouse has no idea. Oh, well, they stop talking. I guess we're all good. It's amazing. When I talk to couples, the amount of conversations that are going on in people's heads that never get spoken is amazing. One person's sitting there on their iPad. The other person's over there going, rah, 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 rah. And I wanted this, and rah, 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 and he ignored me, and rah, rah, rah. or she ignored me, rah, rah, rah. But it never gets said because we're afraid of the consequences, because we're afraid of the stress. So it's so important to be able to say, this is important to me. Say, hey, Joe, I understand whatever's on your phone is really important to you. I need you to pay attention for me for a minute because it's important to me. In our house, we have a signal. I go like this. It just says, I need your eyes. And you'll see, my husband's a programmer, so he'll be sitting on his computer. I'll say, hun? And I go, mm-hmm. And I'll just stand there and look at him. Okay, we've been married for almost 30 years. So I stand there and look at him. And he'll go like this. Yeah? And then he goes. And he just stands and he'll start going again. And I just have to stand there and wait. And finally, he tips his laptop screen down and goes, yes. Because we had an awful lot of arguments because he would say, you didn't tell me that. You didn't tell me that. Because if we're on any other device, no, we didn't hear it. Our brain did not compute it. So we get into fights about that. So try and get past it. So worrying is like praying for what you don't want. When you worry and worry and worry and worry, it's like that's what's on your mind instead of what the solution is. So we don't want to pray that way. We want to pray about what we do want. So it's really important to ask for support from God and the other people in your life. 2 Corinthians says, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Taking captive every thought means you have a choice. You don't just have to react as if there's a bear coming. You have a choice. And I'm not talking about stuffing feelings. Most of us were taught to just stuff it down, ignore it. I'm not talking about that. Acknowledging them, honoring them, and then choosing how you respond out of them instead of just reacting. So taking captive every thought means you might want to seek connection and counsel, which is what your brain is telling you to do. It's putting out that oxytocin. It wants you to go connect. Find counsel with humbleness and honesty. So if you're having difficulties, if you're finding a lot of stress in relationships, at work, at home, in parenting, seek counsel. Seek connection. That's what God told us to do. At work, you might check with management or coworkers or human resources or an employee assistance plan. At home, talk to your spouse, adult family members, friends, kids appropriately, right? I don't know how many parents come to me and say, the kids don't help out a lot at the house at all. You know, they never put their dishes in the dishwasher. Well, have you asked them to? Well, no. Well, it's not like kids want to do chores. And if they don't do it, rather than having this long lecture, kids tune out. The longer the lecture, the less they hear. So rather, if you've said, hey, guess what, guys? From now on, everybody puts their own dishes in the dishwasher after dinner. And they're not doing it, you just go, whoa, 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 kids, dishes. No lectures, no yelling, nothing. And if they've gone off and found the television or the iPad or whatever, you go over to them and say, huh, I'll hold on to this while you go put your dishes in the dishwasher. A lot of stress at home. Teenagers. Before they drive, you have fantastic leverage. They want you to drive them all over the place. You have fantastic leverage. Oh, you want me to drive you to the mall? Okay. Before I drive you to the mall, you need to have all the dishes out of the dishwasher. The dishwasher is a huge thing for families usually. So before I drive you to the mall, that needs to be done. I'll give you a half-hour warning. Dishwasher takes 5 minutes. I've timed it. If you really go fast, it takes 3.5. Right? Yeah. So use the car as leverage. And when you're in the car, use that time to connect with your kids. You want me to drive you someplace? No earbuds. Talk to them. Let them choose the radio station. And even if you hate it, talk about it. Say, what do you like about that? Find out. Express interest in them. Because when you build relationship, you have much less rebellion. It's rules without relationship that lead to rebellion. Very important that we build relationship with our little ones our medium ones, and our big ones. Build relationship. So with relationships, if you're having trouble with relationships, pray about it. Approach your church about it. Perhaps there's someone there that can help. Talk to friends. Talk to pastoral counselors. Find a psychotherapist. And one of the really important things is that if you are having struggles in a relationship, that you talk to somebody who can help you. Because if you go and talk to somebody who can't help you, all you're doing is rehearsing everything that's wrong in that relationship and complaining, and nothing's changing. And that can feel so stuck. And then you go home and you just feel worse. So try and get somebody that can actually help. And in your own health, have your annual checkups. Men, have your annual checkups. Women, go and do it. They do it. They have their blood screenings. They find out if their iron, folic acid, and B12 are on track, their thyroid hormones, all that stuff. What do you guys do? Oh, maybe next year. Yeah, you need your checkups. Go and check. Have your blood tests done. And a lot of doctors don't do men's blood tests. They need to. There's a lot of hormones that can go out of whack for men, too. So get it checked. Go and have your checkups done. Exercise, nutrition, water, these are all important things. Oops. So it's all important things that we need to do. So any questions before I go on? Because I'm going to give you a stress test. Any other questions? Yes. Put on your flip-flops when you're walking at home, yeah? Okay.
If I use a different tone, it will be done for a couple of days. If I say it with your way, which is a decent way, it's done. Next time, no.
Right.
So repetitive problems,
yes.
Or I won't say problems, because some of them are trivial problems.
Right, so you're caught in a dance.
I'm sorry?
You're caught in a dance.
Yes.
It just keeps going around yes. and around and around. So the example was something just like asking a teenager to put on flip-flops around the house. Hopefully he's not here. So something seems so simple, it's important to you. Have a conversation about it. Say, son, sit down. Let's have a chat. Take him to Tim Hortons if you need to. There's one really nearby. Have a chat. Son, it's important to me that you wear flip-flops in the house because whatever. I want the carpets to be clean. I don't want bare feet on the carpet, whatever. And he goes, I know. Right? Kids never say nothing nicely. I know. You say, well, I'd like to find out what's going on for you. What's up? Why don't you want to do that? I don't know what he's going to tell you. The point is you started a conversation about it. Because what you've been doing is just telling him to do it. You have no idea why he's not doing it. You're just telling him to do it. And you haven't told him it's important to you or explained why. Maybe you did years ago. There's been no dialogue. It's been one way. And that's rules without relationship lead to rebellion. If you connect and have that little conversation, at the end of it, you might say, you know, he says, I think it's a really stupid rule. And you validate feelings and you say, I understand you think it's a really stupid rule. Whereas the old reaction might have been, how dare you say any of my rules are stupid? They're my rules. And I'm the father of the house and you will listen to my rules. And the kid goes, great, I can hardly wait to move out. But instead of having a conversation and he says, that's a stupid rule, you say, I can understand why you think that's a stupid rule. It's important to me. I need you to do it. So you have a dialogue. It's just different.
What if after this dialogue?
There you go. You have to talk.
Everything goes to step one.
Right.
I'm just giving this as an example.
Yeah.
If you do this dialogue and you ended up with a conclusion and everybody's on agreement,
mm-hmm.
then next day, as if nothing had happened. What would you do in this case? Because I'm speaking about sometimes we are stressed because of the repetition of the problem.
Absolutely. You feel like there's no way out of the problem. Yeah. Absolutely. And that gets stressful. So then what you do is you go to the one word reminder. Instead of having this lecture, because what happens is you go, oh, he's not wearing his flip-flops again. He's so disrespectful. How dare he not listen to me? These are the rules. And all, ooh, what does the brain think? Bear coming. Here's a bear. You start getting angrier and angrier. You yell, whatever. You've just gotten so stressed about flip-flops. So instead, just the one-word reminder. Hey, son, flip-flops. And he goes, oh, Dad. You go, I know, flip-flops. You're not as stressed. He still loves you. It's a stupid rule, but he'll do it. And it's just the one-word reminder. That's it. And, I mean, you can get pretty silly about it, too. We can get playful with discipline, right? Like, well, oh, so you don't want to wear flip-flops in the house. Okay, so where are you going to move to? Just kind of funny. Be funny about it. Don't be mean about it. That's it. You can't live in my house if you won't wear flip-flops. But just be kind of funny. Where are you going to move to? And like, oh, fine. One of the biggest things that parents struggle with is the big sigh. And actually, I will say, it's one of the biggest things that spouses struggle with as well. So you ask somebody to do something, and they go, and the alarm bells go off in your head, usually from your own childhood. That's so disrespectful. I would never do that to my parents or my spouse. If they asked me to do something, it was just jump and do it. There's no way I could ever talk back to anybody. And this whole dialogue happens in your head, and the brain goes, ah, there's a bear coming, and up goes the stress. But that big sigh is usually followed by the spouse or the teenager doing it. So when you hear a big sigh, the old meaning was disrespect or doesn't care about me. Try to translate that and instead say, that's frustration talking. My husband taught me that if I say to him, would you like to take the garbage out for me? If he was honest, he would say no. To take the garbage out. Exactly. Yeah. So if you just tell him, take the garbage out. Okay. So do you like it when he tells you to do things? Aha. Aha. So what do you want him to do when he wants you to do something? Ask him for... So you get tired of asking? Is that what you're saying? Here comes a microphone. You're going to be on tape. We're taping this. It's going on YouTube.
You know what? I think she meant to say, we think we do more.
Right. You think that you do a bigger share of the housework. Statistically, you're absolutely right. And it doesn't matter if you work outside the home. Women still do far more of the housework than men. Even if you have a full-time job. So that's just statistically true. And it is one of the biggest resentments that comes up. I don't know what's going on over there. We're having a party. What's happening over there? They don't want to use the microphone.
You don't want to use it.
They don't want to use the microphone. So it is true that women tend to do far more of the housework than men, even if the women work outside of the home. And unfortunately, what happens is women resent it. And when the husband finds out about it, is when you're in couples counseling on the brink of divorce. And the woman brings up the fact that she's been doing more of the housework for the last 20 years, and she's frustrated and has had it. And unfortunately, what also happens is that women say, I have been asking and asking and asking and asking. And the men say, when have you ever asked? I did an experiment the other night because I do marriage, pre-marriage classes. I did an experiment the other night with my husband. My husband was programming on his laptop in the family room, which is right next to our kitchen. Right? Anybody have houses like that? Okay. So I'm in the kitchen. I'm going to empty the dishwasher. And I'm looking at my husband, and for probably 15 years, I felt that I was doing a lot more of the housework and that he was not helping out and that he was not responding to my needs. So I did this experiment where I unloaded the dishwasher as loudly as I possibly could. The plates were getting smashed into the cupboard. They didn't break, but they were being very loud into the cupboard. I was just slamming the cupboard doors. I was dropping the cutlery into the drawer one by one, banging the glasses in the cupboard. It was all an experiment because, as I said, like, we've been married for 30 years now. So, and then I went over and I sat down next to my husband on the couch, and I said, hi. And being a wise husband after 30 years, he closed the lid of his laptop. And he said, yes. And I said, do you know what I was just doing? He said, no. I said, you sure? You have no idea what I was just doing? He said, no. I said, I was emptying the dishwasher. He said, okay. And I said, I emptied it really, really loudly. Did you not hear it at all? And he said, no. No, he did not hear it. And I was loud. Like, probably I wouldn't have been surprised if my daughter came up from, you know, the basement and said, what the heck is going on up here? I was loud. He didn't even hear it because he was so focused, just so focused. But what's the dialogue in my head 15 years ago? He should be in here helping me. He knows that I'm cleaning up the kitchen. Why is he not in here helping me? I have to do everything on my own. He's ignoring my needs. But honestly, he didn't even have a clue. So these are the kind of dialogues that happen, and it causes so much stress in relationships because we're not talking about our needs in a way the other person hears. I'll ask something here. Okay, so men, this is generalizing, but it tends to be true. So forgive me for generalizing. Let's say that you've just had coffee at work. So you've just had coffee at work, and you sat down at your desk, and somebody came up to you and said, will you come for coffee with me? What would you say? No, I just had coffee. Okay. And what if you're not thirsty at all? You might go for the walk. Okay. And you would just say, no, because I just had coffee. Okay. So women, if a woman came up to you and said, can you please come for coffee with me? What would you think she is asking for? Talking, conversation, let's chat about something. Is she asking for coffee? No. Man, what are you thinking? So women are thinking, okay, like I said to my husband on the weekend, I said, you know, the kids are at friends. How about if we go for coffee? You're asking for conversation. And what does your husband say? No, I'm not thirsty. Exactly. But the problem is that we expect men to read between the lines. And they can't. They can't. No. Right, so he's probably thirsty. He's thirsty, and that's why he's asking to go for coffee. So this is where it's so important to say what you mean. And this is what happens often with women in particular. They come into counseling after 10 years of marriage and they say, he doesn't listen to me. He doesn't look after my needs. I ask and ask and ask. And the husband's sitting there going, oh my word, like she never asked for anything. And then the wife says, I asked you to go for coffee. And they say, well, I wasn't thirsty. But if you said to your husband, I haven't seen you all week. You've been so busy at work. Can we go out and do something together? He would know what you're really asking. But this is where we miss each other. We miss each other, and it causes so much stress in the relationship. We miss each other. Okay, so let's go on. I'm going to skip that. Okay. So, coping productively. What we need to do, and you're going to have this in your handout so you can look at it. To cope productively, we want to be able to assess the situation first. So, look at our initial reaction, because we might have this bear reaction. There's a bear coming, but it might actually be that you actually can handle it. So after that initial reaction, take your deep cookie breath, and then think, what are my resources inside? What are my outer resources? Who can I turn to for help? After you assess it, then think, maybe I should avoid this. Is this my responsibility? Is this really something I need to do? Can somebody else do it? Women tend to be socialized to say yes instead of no. And sometimes you need to say no. Men can also do that, where they feel they need to be generous. They need to, if somebody else asks you, can you come build a deck with me this weekend? You say, yes, absolutely. And then you guys are thinking, oh my word, I needed him at home. So we need to consider, do we maybe need to avoid unnecessary stress? We can take control of our environment by making choices, by expressing our needs in a way the other person can really hear. I had, when we talk about missing each other in communication. We lived in California for 5 years. And that was why the doors made a big noise and I kind of jumped because I have a little bit of earthquake post-traumatic stress. So we live in California for 5 years. We would drive up to Victoria every year to see our family. And every year I would read the guidebook as we went past all these lovely places. And every year my husband, I would read, wow, listen to this museum. As we're going closer to the town, and he would say, that sounds really interesting. Come to the next town. Oh, look at that. That's such a quaint little restaurant. Have to get where we're going. So after 4 years of this, we figured out two things. One was, when I read him the description from the guidebook, he didn't realize I was asking him to stop. Once we had that conversation, I said, look, listen to this museum at this next town. He said, that sounds interesting. I said, I want to stop there. And he said, oh, okay. For four years, I'd been thinking he was just ignoring me, not doing what I wanted to do. He just didn't know I was asking. Another thing we learned. For 4 years, I've been saying, can we please take the coast road? Can we please take the coast road? I want to take the coast road. He said, no, we need to get there and get back. It takes an extra day if we take the coast road. We're going to take the freeway. For 4 years, that kept going on. The fifth year, I said, can we please take the coast road? He said, no. I said, this is really important to me. And he said, oh, okay. On the way back, we'll take the coast road. So we left Victoria, took the ferry over to the mainland, and there were flash floods and forest fires, and the coast road was closed. But it didn't matter, because he had said yes. And it was not his fault we couldn't do it. We need to express what we want in our relationships in a way that the other person can hear. So, altering the situation. We need to express our feelings instead of bottling them up. Ask for change if you need it. Be willing to compromise. Be more assertive. Take the time to say, this is really important to me, when it is. Number four, we can also adapt to the situation. Is there another perspective, including God's? One of the most helpful things we can do if we're in a really stressful situation is to think, what is God wanting me to learn from this? And sometimes that can really help. When we're feeling really stressed and overwhelmed, we say, well, what does God want me to learn from this? We can also accept, and this is hugely important, if outer change isn't possible, if you can't change your job description, if there's no way that you can change something that's happening, if there's something in your life that you absolutely cannot change, then accept that you can't change it. Quit fighting it. This is not going to change. Also, take action. And this is really, really important. De-stress. We're talking about stress. De-stress. Make time for fun and relaxation. Hugely, hugely important. Nurturing ourselves is a necessity, not a luxury. It is a necessity. Even Jesus the Christ modeled getting away from the crowds. And when they hit a storm in the lake in their little boat and the disciples were rowing, what was Jesus doing? Sleeping. Get your rest. You deserve it. Get your rest. Connect with others. Do something that you enjoy every single day, especially something creative that engages your senses, which might be art, might be cooking, might be gardening, playing in the mud with your kids. Do something. And finally, adopt healthy lifestyle choices. Get enough sleep. It's so important for your emotional health. Get enough sleep. Reduce your caffeine and sugar intake. If you're feeling tired at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you need protein and water, not coffee. Avoid alcohol, cigarettes, and drugs. All of these add to your stress factors. And eat nutritiously and try and drink enough water. I'm amazed that when I get dehydrated, which you don't know, by the way, your body does not signal you with thirst until you're 10% dehydrated. So we should be drinking before we feel thirsty. When I don't have enough water, I can get triggered into anger like that, just because I'm dehydrated. So it's really important to adopt those healthy lifestyle choices. You may also need to ask for forgiveness and from others. Remind yourself that God tells us to trust him with our troubles. So in Romans, he says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? God will be there for you in your times of trouble. So you may need to ask forgiveness, especially if your reaction to stress has been hurtful to others. If you've been overstressed and you've been burying yourself in your books or your TV or whatever, apologize for the impact of your words, your actions, or your inactions on the people around you. Apologize. And then empathize with the other person's experience. This is so important. If one of your kids comes up to you and says, you know, I miss you, Daddy. I want you to play ball with me. And you say, no, I have to work. He says, but I miss you. You miss that opportunity to connect with your child. And that's what they need from you. And if somebody else comes up to you and says, wow, you know, I was really hurt when you didn't answer my phone call yesterday. We tend to get defensive. Instead, just apologize. I'm so sorry. I was so overworked. I totally forgot. I'm so sorry. If we get defensive, we cut off the other person. And then strive to manage your stress better to avoid hurting the very ones you care about the most. We can push ourselves at work all day, and we come home, and we let out all our stress. in our home environment, which is supposed to be a secure and safe haven for us. So it's so important to manage that better. So how do you relax and recharge? You might go for a walk. You might take vitamin N. That's being out in nature. We actually have scientific evidence now that being in nature, being in God's creation, is incredibly healing for us. Think about the things that you want to do. Play with a pet. Work in your garden. We only have a couple months left. Then it will be under snow. Get a massage. Curl up with a book. Listen to music. Do something. And that's where it's really important to look at all those things that I talked about, avoiding, altering. What is it that is preventing you from having the time? Is it because you're not being assertive about it and saying, hey, hun, I need you to empty the dishwasher tonight so I can go and have 5 minutes with a book? Or getting your kids on board? Or at work? Whatever's going on, it is about being assertive and seeing what you can change. We all say that. Mine is, I don't have time to exercise. Well, I could do 10 minutes of stretching while I'm watching TV. Like, really, I could. So figure it out what you need to do. And if you need help, ask for it. That comes back to being assertive about our needs. So God created humans to be in relationship with Him and also with each other. The Bible is all about relationships. So our perceptions and reactions to stress affect and damage our relationships. And this is so important to recognize. So, for example, I was doing a presentation a few months ago, and Friday, the new person in charge contacted me and said, that presentation you're doing for us on Monday, I want you to do a totally different topic. Okay, great. So I have the weekend. Wonderful. So I came home, and I stormed in the house. I'm under stress, right? There's a bear of a presentation on Monday. I storm into the house. I put my stuff down, and my husband's in the den on the computer. That's where he always is, right? And I go, oh, I can't believe this. They've totally changed the presentation I have to do. It means I'm going to have to work on it over the weekend. This is just so frustrating. I just can't believe it. And he says to me, well, why don't you just quit? And I looked at him. I said, pardon? And he said, just call them and tell them to find somebody else. And I did my sigh and turned around and walked out of the room. Now, we've had conversations over the last 15 of the 30 years. So he found me afterwards and he says, I really screwed that up, didn't I? I said, yeah, you did. Telling me to quit is not helpful. You know I'm not going to quit. It's not an option. And he said, yes, I am sorry you're so frustrated and overwhelmed. What do you think I did? What do you think? When he said you're frustrated and overwhelmed. You said quit? I said thank you. Thank you. That's all I needed to hear. Was him validating my feelings. I wasn't looking for an answer. And a lot of people, particularly men, offer an answer. And often women are just asking for empathy. Just share my feelings. Tell me it's okay. Yeah, it's okay to be sad, mad, whatever, rather than offer a solution. I'm married to an engineer. I've had to train him. It's taken 15 of the 30 years. The first 15 years were rough, very rough. And then we started talking more. So I invite you to do it sooner. So I'm going to end with a prayer. This is a prayer that you've probably heard the first part of many times. I find the second part even more powerful. This is the Serenity Prayer. God, give us grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking, as Jesus did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle, so much.
You're
welcome. Personally, I found it very, very useful. So I hope it's the same for the rest. So I think I was stressed before this meeting, by the way, because screen didn't work. I couldn't find the light switch. So I think I'm distressed now. So thanks so much. And for everybody, I have a few cards here and a few handouts. I will send handouts by email, but there's a few cards for Michelle and for the Christian Counseling in Ottawa, if you'd like more information. So thanks for coming. I appreciate it. And thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, thank you very much. And I hope that it's worked with a woman and with women after this council. Okay, after we finish the prayer, please go downstairs direct because we have a refreshment all together. And please quickly, because we have a youth meeting here. Okay, just should be begun like from 5-10 minutes ago. Okay, thank you. In the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, all in one God, amen. In intercession, St. Mary, St. Paul, St. Anthony, St. Mark, St. Mina, Pope Carolus, make us worthy to pray thankfully. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us the daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we trespass against us. Lead us in temptation, the evil one. In Christ Jesus, our Lord, thine be the kingdom, the power.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.